Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Christina, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in the workshop on Sunday, Facing and Embracing a workshop on Fear. Welcome, Christina.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being with us, being willing to talk about your experience. So perhaps you could tell us what you saw as you participated in the workshop.
The interesting thing that I noticed when I listened back to the recordings that I wasn't quite aware of during the workshop, but is that my recordings made sort of a process map of around the process of fear, and just how brilliant that was to have recordings of the movement from identification with fear all the way, you know, full circle, you know, to the mentor's love and embrace, to back here to the moment, you know, using the physical body as a vehicle. And it was just such a loving way to be guided through a process that, for me personally, is so gripping. And I have a lot of gratitude.
That's so great. That's so true, because the process that we were led through really was a step-by-step process of working with fear. Well, really, the title, Facing and Embracing. And as you say, you know, fear can be such a compelling identification. It really, really gets us. So then it sounds like in having those, we did recordings of the various parts of the workshop, and then listening back to all of the recordings together really had you see what a beautiful thing that is to kind of see those movements of here's what the fear is, you know, what that feels like to be in it, and then moving through to a place of not being identified with it anymore.
Exactly. And it was so helpful to first be asked to identify a particular fear, because, you know, for me, the tendency is to just be kind of big picture and, you know, fear is this, you know, really big thing. It's like, let's just work with one fear, and it doesn't have to be the biggest fear. And, you know, really taking the time to look and identify a place, and then, you know, recognizing the stories behind it and the physical sensations that come along with it, and, you know, being led through that, which, I mean, it's fear, so it can be scary to, you know, to look at that, at least for me. And and then, you know, just then being brought into the loving embrace of the mentor. And for me, the highlight, which is because it's something I've never done when I've worked with fear, at least I don't think I have, is to move into the physical body as a means for transitioning from identification to presence. And and that was so powerful. And I think I did jumping jacks. I did something, you know, because fear grips me in my chest, you know, it starts in my stomach, and it moves up to my heart space, and it just holds me. I mean, it's almost like having on a straitjacket. And so it was so helpful to, like, move physically and then to sit with what I felt, with the sensations that were available through moving the body in that way. And what a miracle it was, because then all of a sudden I'm just here because I'm paying attention to the body, you know, not the story that's stuck
brilliant.
On fear.
Yeah, it's so brilliant. It's really why that is so powerful, isn't it, to add that physical component, because as we always say, the body is in the moment. I mean, it's so funny to say that. Everything is in the moment. We can only be in the moment. But we have this strange ability to think we're not, right? To be thinking about yesterday or worrying about tomorrow or whatever it is. But the body's right here. And so when we use that assistance of having that, in this case, with fear, really coming back to the body, and so you were really able to feel where those sensations were, and then to do something physical like jumping jacks, which completely changes the energy. And so often that, you know, the story, which of course, in order to have the label fear, there has to be some layer of a story, and the story gets attached to sensations. And so being in the body and moving that energy And moving around the sensations can be so helpful.
Yeah, really. And it's so simple. I think at one point when I was sitting, I was just focusing on my hand. And I had just done movement, so, you know, the hand was really alive. It was vibrant, you know, pulsating, you know, with blood. And it's so neat because my eyes were closed, but I was my mm-hmm. attention was on it. And then I opened my mm-hmm. eyes, and I had that experience of, you know, so I can see the hand. I can feel what feels like the blood or the energy moving through the hand. You know, I can witness the hand as it moves, you know, both mm-hmm. from a feeling place and a visual place. And it's just, and it's only the hand, and it's so simple, and it's right there for all of us, for, you know, most of us. Yeah.
Right. Well, and what you're really describing is directing attention. Because even in your description of that, the attention is so minutely with the hand. You know, the feeling of it, the texture of it, what it feels like for the blood to be moving through it. You know, kind of that, it sounds like some gratitude for all the hand can do. You know, all of those components to it. And when the attention is so fully in the moment that way, in this case with the hand, it can't be on that story. So the fear can't be maintained.
Yeah, exactly so. And I find fear tends to be very future-based. You know, something's coming or, you know, mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I better watch out, better take care of things to make sure it doesn't come. And that's all very much not real.
You know? Exactly.
But it's so gripping that it really does take something, at least for me, you know, in this experience, it's so gripping that, you know, being able to look at something so tangible is very helpful. And
Well, and hearing you describe at the beginning, hearing those recordings and being able to listen to them all together, I'm really sensing, and I know this was something that I saw in the workshop too, that sequence that can be applied with whatever fear we're seeing. You know, I mean, we can literally practice that sequence with anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you mean the recording sequence, the prompts that we were given?
Is that exactly, exactly, those prompts, yeah. Because again, you said one of the instructions we were given is, you know, you don't have, it could be anything, choose any fear to work with today, and it doesn't have to be the biggest one. And that's such a kind reminder that, in that what we were walked through in the sequence is a practice. It's literally a training. And so there's a way in which it's very kind to not use the biggest one and then to actually train with that process. And so when the really real ones do come along, the really big ones, we're trained up to have a process to bring to that.
Yeah, so gentle and kind. And it's funny that I was so grateful that that the presenter, that it was Sequoia, gave us the guidance to not choose the biggest one, because as I was recording, I found myself saying, and the thing that, you know, the biggest thing that gets me, and then I just remembered, okay, maybe this isn't the place I want to go. I think I remember her saying, don't do that. I mean, she didn't say it like that, of course, but and that's just always so helpful, because then I can look at something really specific and small, and then I can see it better, because I'm not like pulled so heavily and quickly into that, you know, the sensations and the stories and the fear.
Exactly. I wanted to underline that you said a minute ago too. That is why working with fear can be so tricky, because there's so much fear there, and that tends to put us in a place of survival, and it's very hard to look. Yeah. So compassionate to have a process to be walked through. And I did want to say that the exercises we did on Sunday come from the fear book. You know, in the towards the back of the fear book, there are those sequence of kind of, you know, exercises that you can do, a little retreat at the back of the book, and the exercises that we're referring to are in there. And so people can walk themselves through it. And I just had such a fun image, Christine, as you were saying that, you know, at the start of the workshop, you know, well, the biggest thing that gets me, And I just pictured the mentor circling back with her, you know, at some point and saying, hey, anytime you want to work with that one, let us know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Hmm. Well, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about your experience. That was really fun.
Yeah, thank you, Jen. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take good care, Christina.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Christina. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
That was a great conversation.
Should we call that one Fun with Fear?
Fun with Fear. Yes. Yes, I think
I mean,
we should.
Because that's really what they were talking about, right? I mean, it's just...
Yes. And actually what drops in when you say that is the quote that Sequoia read at the end of the workshop from the Fear book, that fear is not what we think it is and that it's something to be pursued. And it's very fun.
Yeah. And when it's when we do it in that kind, gentle, compassionate, you know, non-competitive, non-ego way
yes.
That was described, then it really is, well, it's like everything else in practice, isn't it? I mean, it's exciting, it's interesting, it's fun. There's freedom, and freedom from fear. That's a good time.
Yes, it is a good time. Yeah. Instead of kind of being back on our heels, taking it from fear,
mm-hmm.
we are
yeah.
forward on our toes and looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Seeing it disappear over the horizon.
Yes, the more we try to get a better view of it, the faster it recedes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I have announcements here.
All right.
When you say, she needs to be taken care of, who is she and who are you? Join the guide this Sunday, July 26th, for a discussion unraveling the confusion of identity created by the unexamined use of pronouns. The workshop is free of charge, but registration is required by 12 noon Pacific time on Friday. Mm-hmm. Taking care of our bodies and minds seems more crucial than ever in these current difficult times. An at-home gentle yoga series provides support in cultivating and or strengthening a regular practice of stewarding the body. These brand new yoga sessions, which run from August 14th through September 4th, incorporate themes from the year-long retreat and other elements of awareness practice.
Nice.
Yes. And what would it be like to start the day basking in unconditional love and acceptance? A new group coaching class, Mornings with the Mentor, can get you there. The 4-week virtual class is on Wednesdays starting September 9th. And for these and other practice opportunities...
Wednesday what? Michael, Wednesday, how many?
Starting September 9th.
Wow.
The 4-week virtual class is on...
that's sobering, isn't it? How do we...
Yeah.
Are we talking about September?
Yeah, exactly.
Yikes.
I know.
Yikes.
Time is passing quickly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gosh. All right. Okay. Well, I've adjusted.
Okay, good. For these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to talk with Sherry, you can get in the queue and make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. and conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. It would be great. All right, Sherry, what do you think? Shall we get started here?
We might as well, huh?
Okay, all right. Here
we
go.
I think so. Let's do it. We always have a nice time, so I don't anticipate today being any different. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. All right, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm the first caller? Wow.
Yes, you are.
Hi, this is, well, fantastic. This is my first time calling. Thank you. This is Kate from Portland.
Hello, Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Hello. My question has to do with some tips or skills for bringing compassion to awareness. I've been reading all of your books. I read part of one book every single day, and I get so much out of that. And lately, I've been listening to old open airs every single day, and there's always a call. Someone shares their issue that I get incredible meaning and information from that helps me. But I think I'm trapped in that knowing versus doing trap. I love to know all the things and knowledge of the skills I've learned about compassionate awareness and recognizing the voices of egocentric karmic conditioning definitely has helped me immensely, but there's still so much resistance, and
yes.
I can't really put my finger on it. It's almost like I don't have compassion for these subpersonalities that I know are there that are being beaten down by the voices, and I fall into this trap where, yeah, I can't commit to the recording and listening. There's an edge there. So just curious if you had any comments or tips for dealing with
that. Oh, Kate. Millions and millions of words I could shower you with tonight. But I'm going to try to restrain myself, okay? Because you hit on my favorite subject in the world, as you can imagine. Yes. So what you're seeing, you know, with Eastern philosophy, it's so counter to what we believe in the West is what's going on. That when we say things like we are conditioned to believe that we are this ego that is separate from life and is in a constant fight for its survival, you think, really, now that sounds a little off. And then when we actually get down to looking at it, we get to the place that you're in, which is, now, I understand about suffering. Right? I imagine you're a person who is capable of suffering. True?
Yep.
And I don't want to suffer. So that should kind of be the end of it. Right? Okay. All right. So I see how it happens. You know, there are these voices and they're mean. And okay, so I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to think those thoughts. I don't want to feel like that. I want to be happy. I don't want to do that. But you can't. You can't. And no matter how hard you try, you can't do it. And then there's the next layer, which is, well, what's wrong with you? Right? If you know, let's just take something like recording and listening, right? So these people, you know, go on and on and on about it, that this is just the best thing that ever happened. It'll end depression. It'll end suffering. It'll put it into fear, you know. So, yeah, do that. But you can't. You can't. You just run into this giant wall of resistance. well, what's the matter with you? And that's where we start making peace with, you know, that whole thing about ego. And how maybe that's actually what's going on here. Maybe that's what they mean. That wall of resistance is ego saying, no, human, no, you are not going to, you are not going to be able to choose and have the life you want. I hear that you want to be happy. You're not going to be. Because your happiness is the end of ego. And ego is fighting for its life.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I guess I think there's a subpersonality there, or an ego projection that really thinks I can make the voices go away.
Yeah. And that is there saying that, because that is going to be, that would be the, let's see, how should we say this? That would be a crushing defeat. And such a setup for there really is something wrong with you. You know, you could do this if you really wanted to, but you don't. My God, you are pathetic.
Yeah, oh yeah, but, very familiar.
Yep.
And it's hard, because knowing I can hear that voice in my head, and I can say that voice is ego, but that's not enough to actually break through the resistance and do the awareness practice all the time.
Nope, it's not. And you know, it really does explain why so many really good, sincere people live lives of suffering. Because what we're up against is really, it's mind-boggling. It and again, it's so counter to what we've been taught to believe. Right? You should be able to do this. Come on, you understand it. You're a smart person. You know, you have willpower. You've accomplished a lot of things. You should be able to do this. But it's not that easy.
Yeah, that's it right there. So, and then, the lack of compassion for that person who is struggling to do the thing.
Well, this is where you've reached a really good place, okay? Because that's what it's all about.
Mm.
That's the whole point of awareness practice. Because your authentic nature is that compassion.
I lost you there.
Oh, am I back? Am I here?
I can hear you, Sherry.
Sherry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, Michael, it might be you.
Are you able to hear Sherry?
Yeah, I can.
My long hair. Yeah?
I'm having trouble hearing Sherry. I can hear you now, Sherry. Kate, could you hear Sherry?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't lose connection, so.
Okay, good. So it's me. We keep going.
Welcome back.
isn't that wonderful? It's so comfortable. Oh, it's me. Oh, okay.
All yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's the whole opportunity, I would say. Now, not everybody would agree with this, but this is the perspective of this practice, that our opportunity as human beings is to find that compassion and to offer that compassion to ourselves as the one human being that we really know intimately. Mm-hmm. And so the whole process is one of moving away from, I am a conditioned, struggling, suffering human being, to my authentic nature is conscious, compassionate awareness, wisdom, love, and compassion. And that's the movement that we're making. And that's the place that you're describing, where you are going to be required to bring that loving kindness to the person who is trying so hard to get out of this ego trap that she finds herself in. And ego's going to fight you every inch of the way. Every inch of the way.
I guess I didn't anticipate it being so strong. I mean, I know it is, but it's a doozy. It's definitely
yes.
humbling.
Well, that's, oh, it is humbling. And you know, that's a very good thing. It's really, it's very, very good for us to be humbled.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Where, you know, it's, we not only find compassion for ourselves, but for one another. Because we know how hard it is. So why is somebody acting like a jerk? Why is somebody being hateful? Why are they acting like that? What's the matter with them? Well, they're identified with ego, just like I get identified with ego. Mm. Just like I can be a jerk, they can be a jerk. Yeah, we really are all in this together.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Yeah. Thanks for
Before I let you go, do you know about the year-long retreat?
I've heard about it. Yeah, it's already started, hasn't it, for this year?
It has already started, and in fact, we started in March, I think. And so we are quite a ways into it, but that's not a problem. And it is prorated. So if you look into it, read about it, we're on every morning,
okay,
Monday through Friday, and it's a whole Sangha conversation. And I think you would enjoy it, and I think you would really enjoy.
Yeah, if it's not too late to join, I'll definitely.
No.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to know. I thought maybe I'll catch it next year, All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Bye bye.
It was great talking with you. Okay. Take care. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kate. And Sherry, what dropped in for me during that conversation is that the compassion is just paramount. It's just such a requirement.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best thing, right? It is the whole deal. It's what we're going for in this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Because without it, there is no hope for us. And so that growing realization that it is that compassion, that loving kindness that causes us to want to wake up, that puts us on the path, that helps us stay on the path, gets us through the really hard places, keeps opening doors for us here and there. You know, often just at the time when you think, I really can't do this. And then there's that little moment, right? An insight, something, somebody says something, I read something, I keep going. Yeah.
Yes. And as you mentioned at the end there, having the support of a daily practice with a daily conversation with Sangha is just invaluable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
Great.
Yeah, we couldn't do it by ourselves. I mean, you know, even the Buddha didn't do it by himself,
mm-hmm,
which, of course, as we're fond of pointing out, that's why he left us with Sangha as one of the three jewels, because you can't do it on your own. It's not possible.
Yes, yes. Lovely. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller.
Hello, Michael. Oh.
Hello. Perfect. Go ahead. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Tom from Arizona.
Hey, Tom.
Hello, Tom. What's going on?
I wanted to express my gratitude and just test if practice works. If I'm not,
oh, wow. Michael, are you having trouble hearing Tom?
Yes. Tom, are you there? We were getting a little bit of it, and then we lost. Are you back now?
He went away.
Darn. Well, anyway.
We heard that.
There you are.
You want to keep talking for a sec?
I'm so sorry. Did I lose you guys?
Yes.
You disappeared for a little bit, but you sound good now.
Thank you so much, though. I
Huh. There's just something about, as soon as somebody says, can you hear me, we can hear them, and they, as soon as they start talking, we can't hear them. I don't know. Technology fiendishness.
Yes, and we've lost him here online, so I will keep an eye out for him.
Okay, yeah.
When he calls back in.
Okay.
All right, and let's go to our next caller here.
Oh, my God. Isota here. I was so
Hello,
happy.
Hello, Isota.
Oh, thank you so much.
In one day. I'm so
Yes,
blessed.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm so blessed to have the chance to have you help me on this. I'm so blessed. Oh, thank you so much. You know, I was
What's
even process. I was even process mapping the process I'm on, hoping that I would be on so I could tell it to you and you could give me a hand.
All
so,
right, here we are.
So
the answered.
Yes, I'm so lucky. So the thing is this. I like this. Has been my year in terms of work. The only person in the world, I don't understand why. So I'm inundated by work, you know? And and it's activating a lot of feeling not enough, feeling bad in me. So for example, and I do a lot of stuff that complicate my life with work on purpose, like this one. So it was, I really wanted to listen to the show. It was 3 minutes before the show, and I had nothing to do, and there was a text I should send to a customer, a text message, that could wait till tomorrow. And I sent it knowing that I would get a reply, that the person would call me during the show. I know the guy, so I know that he would call me nonstop until I replied, you know. And in fact, mm-hmm. he's calling me right now, you know. And I had to stop listening to what you were saying to the previous person to answer, I will get back to you at 8, because I cannot reply right now. And I always do stuff like this with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, and I process mapped. Why? So the feeling before sending the message is, I cannot stay here and do nothing. Acting will calm my anxiety. If I don't send the message, if I don't send the message, I am a bad person. I would just write in everything, you know, as it was happening, you know. And then even write, it's obvious that he's going to reply during open air. I even wrote it, you know. And then I wrote, I'm a bad worker if I don't send it now. And then the whole thing unraveled. And this happened in everything. And I get super stressed and I cause it to myself.
Well, I mean, that what you're describing is a classic bamboozle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And so, and you're getting to the bottom of it. It's not going to be able to do that to you forever. But it has been successful in doing that for exactly the reasons that you lay out, right? Anxiety is just huge. Urgency, anxiety, that just drives people to make all kinds of bad decisions and choices, right? Because I get rattled. And then ego drops in something to do, and I just do it. And as you describe it, it does that over and over and over and over. Then I feel pressured. I feel bad. I feel out of control. Right? I know it's not working, but I can't stop myself. Now we're back with Kate, right? I can't stop myself. I can't.
Exactly. And you know what you said this morning of that moment of feeling like, when you follow conditioning and you feel that small mm-hmm. relief. So mm-hmm. probably that is a kind of addiction, because the moment I sent the message to this guy, you're like, I have done that, you know?
Yeah.
And then,
yes.
of course, they
yes.
all... And so that's probably what I should be aware of, you know? That I don't need that small...
Isota, in the there's nothing wrong with you. The definition of a self-hating behavior is something that feels good and feels bad at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you're describing.
Exactly.
Right? It feels good because there's that relief. Oh, thank God I did that. You know, I sent the message. But I feel bad because I know as I'm sending it that this is not going to go well. Right? And that's the addiction. You know, the addiction is to the self-hate, to ego.
Yes, and you're right. And it's even to the drama, you know, because then things escalate and everything becomes super complicated.
Yes.
And probably I'm so used to being in that state that the state of peace and calm is unusual and it makes me anxious. Yes. It could be, right?
Oh, it makes ego incredibly anxious.
Right? It makes
because
ego anxious,
not
reflecting
me. It.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're
there's
right.
Nothing reflecting it. But all that drama, now it's just, you know, it's, as we say, a hog in slop. I don't know if that's a good expression.
Sorry?
In your world, a hog in slop. Let's see. Yeah, that's not good.
I never heard.
Anyway, very few people have. But it's where ego wants to be. You know, ego wants all of that drama and adrenaline and, you know, because that it's getting all the attention then. That's why meditation isn't more popular, right? There's nothing going on for ego when people sit down and they're just still.
It's the same thing. Oh, my God, I'm so blessed. I can't believe that I was in this situation and I had the luck of having you shine a light on it for me. I'm so blessed. Thank you so much. And it's exactly like that. Exactly like that. Thank you immensely, really.
Oh, you are so welcome. And stay in touch about it, right? Because that's,
I will.
Yeah. It's exciting to see that so clearly. All right.
It is. Thank you so much. Deep gashon.
Gashon to you, Risotto. Good night, or good day, or whatever it is where you are.
Good night here.
Good night, okay.
Thanks for joining us, Risotto. And Sherry, I love that conversation, and I love looking closely at ego to see what it's doing. And as you pointed out, that feeling good and feeling bad at the same time is just a hallmark of what it's doing.
Mhm. Mhm. So many behaviors that people struggle over fit in, you know, stuff like food and alcohol and all of those kinds of things. But yelling at somebody, just so many things that people struggle with. We can see that there's that relief that Soto was mentioning. That relief that feels really good, and then right with it is the feeling bad because that's not the thing to do. And what's the matter with you?
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And Sherry, we're going to break and hear from our Zen Awareness Coaching Program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Zen Awareness Coaching supports us to look at the content of our lives through the lens of process. Through the 6 weekly sessions, we use content such as relationships, career, money, health, even spiritual practice itself, and get support for looking at it through the eyes of not what, but how. We use the tools of recording and listening, process mapping, and weekly practice commitments to see how we suffer so we can drop that and support the human to live in unconditional love and acceptance. People say that the structure and one-to-one support that coaching offers makes a huge difference in their lives. If you've ever attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat and would like to work with a Zen Awareness Coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Let Zen Awareness Coaching provide the support and structure for living in the how of presence.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have more callers here. Sherry, are you back?
All right. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Let me find our next caller here. Next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, good evening, Sherry and Michael. It's Janice from Victoria, BC in Canada.
Well, hello.
I'm phoning because I think I need a little help here, Sherry. I have to say, in general, I'm just living in joy almost all of the time because I'm seeing ego, catching ego, curious about ego. And I also have a lot of things in my life that are going on that I feel like I'm, in general, I'm just rising to the moment and what I need. I'm excited about getting out at night. I've carried on with that as a practice because that is the time I have this solo time alone. And I've been really blessed this week to see the comet every night and just looking up at that mystery of something that is just so vast and kind of there's just time and space kind of just merges. So that's great. And then today I'm in a grocery store, and I just feel like I'm melting into tears, and there's ego says, like, there's no apparent reason.
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at that because
Janice, wait. Yeah. We have to stop and explore that just a little. So you're in a grocery store and you melted in tears. And what was your sense of that? Not ego's assessment, but what was your sense of what was going on with you?
Well, it just felt so. It felt difficult to be there. I'm texting, for example, I'm texting my husband who can't come into the store, who needs all sorts of different kinds of. There's like food things that, you know, mostly that you can't have because they have phosphates or potassium or sodium or something. And then I've lost vision in the center of my left eye and I can't read. And, you know, it just felt like you have to keep moving because people are behind and, you know, I'm trying to follow the arrows. And it just felt like the whole world started to kind of close in. And I just found myself weeping.
Uh-huh. Well, so it sounds like that was kind of reasonable.
Yeah. And yet,
I
guess it is. Yes.
If I told you that story about me, wouldn't your response be, well, gosh, Sherry, that's really understandable.
Yes, I would. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just crying now because I have a sign, I have a card that I picked up at one of our retreats, and it, you know, it says go happy. I, you know, all I see is go happy through my right eye and through my left eye. It's like it's erased. And thank God I did the, you know, facing fear workshop because I had a chance to just look to see, like, what is really going on? Because I, you know, like losing vision is, you know, I'm hoping it's temporary, but losing vision, and I saw how strong I'm attached to being independent, an independent self. And
Janice, may I add a little piece to that?
Yes, please.
There's you being an independent self, and yes, probably most of us can relate strongly to that, but that's not really the situation that you're in.
No, I'm not in that. Right.
Which is something, of course, ego would like us to not notice. Right? Because you weren't in the store doing these things for yourself.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyhow, I did a reflection of what I heard even on the year long this morning about just doing, you know, pulling all the energy together, whether you want to or not, to make a two-handed recording or a recording, and just sort of spilling it all out and knowing that there was resistance and just saying, I'm doing it anyhow, and listening to it. And there was so much resistance to listen, and I'm doing that anyhow. And then allowing some words from the mentor.
And may I again interrupt you? You're so gracious mm-hmm. with my interruptions. So if your husband said, you know, I'm really upset. Can I talk to you for a few minutes? Would you say, no. I don't want to talk with you now. I don't want to do that. No.
Yeah.
The answer is no. I happen to know that. Of course you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's what ego would do to you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same process. I mean, here's somebody who's upset, who needs to talk, and what's ego's contribution, but to try to thwart it at every turn. And what you chose to do is just go right on ahead and do what you know is possible to do for that person who's struggling.
Yes, because I heard this morning, I actually heard the words out loud. I don't know, but there's going to be a morning where I'm not going to be able to get up and face this. And it that was like, oh my God. Those words weren't even in my head. I said them out loud. So I knew.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been higher than a kite about the comet. So I know I can turn my attention. I know I can. I know I can get in the queue. And I know that when I'm in the queue, I'm just with everybody. I'm with the whole Sangha talking and nodding my head and saying thank you.
Well, and Janice, you know, with that, it might be really helpful to bring the conscious awareness to those situations in the same way that you, again, you would bring them for me or for your husband. And so you're going to go into the grocery store and there are going to be a lot of challenges. A lot of challenges. So we don't let somebody go into a situation by themselves where there are going to be a lot of challenges, because we know full well that the only companion that person is going to have then is ego, just waiting to make it as miserable as it can possibly be. And so to go in with the same kind of awareness that you need to bring to getting up in the morning, because you're going to face a day where there are going to be a lot of really difficult things to navigate.
Yeah. Yes, and
it's easy with the comet, right?
Easy. It is so easy with the comet.
Out there walking around. It's nighttime. It's beautiful. Yeah. There's the comet. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, of course, ego would ruin that if it could. But you would be on to that because you go into the grocery store, you can't see out of one eye, you're looking at this little tiny print. You do have the magnifying glass app on your phone, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. And so you know that, and you know it's going to take time, and there's going to be pressure, it's going to be difficult, and so you make that relationship, that companionship, be the primary focus, and the getting accomplished what you're there to accomplish becomes the secondary focus.
Yes. Yeah.
Because what ego always wants to do is make the why you're at the store be the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And the human being to finish way, way, not even a poor second, but way down the list of things that matter in this situation. We got to reverse that.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, because that does happen, like say, eating and resting and doing those things, physical things, I start to see when I need them, sort of past the time I need them. And I need to do that sooner. I want to do it sooner. And I am often doing it. But it was like, this was humbling. This was humbling.
Yes, humbling. And it is good to be humbled, isn't it? So again, just to point out how well you know how to do this, okay? You don't wait for your husband to need something before it occurs to you. You're constantly being present to and anticipating. You know that you need to attend to that. You know you need to think about, you know he's going to need whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So you're very skilled at that. It's just bringing that toward you as well as toward him.
Yep. Thank you so much. And I'll be practicing with you on Sunday.
Good. Good. I'll look forward to it.
Yeah.
Take
Me
care
too.
Of yourself. Okay. Enjoy the comet tonight.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah. Dasho to everybody.
Dasho.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Sherry, what dropped in was the compassion that we were talking about with Kate earlier and how essential that is and that it starts with us and then it extends outward.
Yes. Yes. Again, exactly the opposite of what we have been taught.
Yes. Yes, you were talking about this morning on the morning show, what it means to be selfish and selfless.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago, Michael. I
don't know.
Recalling that. But yes, exactly. It's just the opposite. And the image that we often use is that what we're up against, the way we've been conditioned, it would be the equivalent of asking a starving child to share its meal.
Yes.
You know, we just wouldn't do that because it would be so, so cruel.
Yes.
Right? And yet that's the position ego wants to put us in all the time. But when we're full, when we have everything we need, then generosity is just a given.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, and as you were mentioning, I think, earlier tonight, I don't need to look far to wonder why people snap at a little, you know, what seems like a small challenge, because I do that. That's what happens to me.
Yes.
So.
Yes, yes, because we are very much like rubber bands. When we get stretched beyond our capacity, we snap.
Yes, exactly. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Kim calling from Vashon.
Hey, Kim.
Hello, Kim. What's going on?
Well, just really sitting, just so, such a beautiful call just now, just sitting with the, just humble and just very thought, you know, just
blessed.
Wonderful. Blessed, yeah.
We're blessed, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. So I have been sitting in a little bit of a paralyzed state about since I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago almost about giving And I'll remind you that I'm looking at giving from the heart. And the koan that you left me with was about my mom turning 80. And what do you want to give her from your heart? Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to get out of the head, stop the noodling because, and it's just been paralyzing. I sit with it. I'm sitting with it. And the only tiny little thing, maybe it's not tiny, but the only thing that happened recently was, well, maybe you should ask her what she wants.
What kind of a, excuse me, what kind of a person is she, Kim?
Well, here we, yeah.
Is she a things person? Is she a, does she like expensive presents? Does she, is she a, well, what I'd really rather is that you, you know, I got to see you, or is she, what kind of a person is she?
Yeah, yes. She'd rather that she got to see me, and I mean, you know, we're already talking about maybe doing a big Zoom thing, and I think the paralyzed part is all about, I think, as you said, when you mentioned trauma to me, I was like, trauma? You said, boy, that's a lot of trauma, because what I had mentioned to you was that I look to her as sort of the role model of thoughtfulness, and when you said, oh, so much trauma around that, I'm like, but she really is so thoughtful. She's so thoughtful. Mm-hmm. But then I started to see some of the trauma, actually, and how, you know, there's this standard, and I think some of the trauma is around hearing from her when somebody gives her a gift that is inappropriate, like, oh, this person thinks they know me so well, but they gave me such a terrible gift. Like, I kind of grew up with that. And then, so then there's like, you know, I just am so like, I'm just paralyzed. This is the word that I give of what to do.
Yeah. I'm just going to say yep a lot because I grew up the same way. Mm-hmm. And the net result for me is that I never give presents. Unless there's only one way that I will ever give somebody a present, and that is back in the day, remember when we used to go out and go places?
Yeah.
If you and I were out together and there was something that you obviously just loved, but for whatever reason you weren't going to give it to yourself, then mm-hmm. I would give you that as a gift. But only after you stated unequivocally that you really, really, really wanted this. Because so I feel your trauma, Kim. I really do. And along with that, I was just looking. So I'm about your mother's age, and you're about my daughter's age. And I was thinking, what would I want on a birthday like that? And I thought, now, not that I'm saying you should do this. I'm just telling you that this might be an interesting place to look, is for you to write her a letter that tells her all of this.
Wow. Tell her
about the trauma.
Not about the trauma. No. Just about
the struggle. No, not about
struggle.
The trauma. But about how much you love her. And and how it puts you in this place of what can I give you that expresses that? How can I let you know how much you mean to me? How could I ever say or do anything that would express how I feel about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well. Here's a little place that I'm looking also, and thank you for that. I think she would like that.
It might be a fun, be a really interesting exercise for you to do, whether it ever goes anywhere or not.
And so every time I give her something, she loves it. This is the thing that's so funny about all of this, is that whenever I've given her anything, you know, but there's a part of me that doesn't trust because I've heard her say such things about other gifts. Like, how could that person know me so well and give me that? Are they like, wow, they're really a weird gift giver, blah, 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 you know? So then I'm like gun shy, as they say, terrible metaphor, but kind of like, ugh. And then I thought to myself, if I were not here, if I were dead, then she would be left with what I was in her life. And that would be it. That would be the gift. And that was kind of like, I mean, I don't know if that's just a stupid thing to go to, but it kind of left me, because I heard you say you don't give Christmas presents and all of that. And I was like, wow, what would that be like to not give anything? What would that be like?
No presents.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no physical presents.
No presents. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which is very different from not giving.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not to fall into that trap of this is an occasion. And I mean, I, of course, you know, everybody knows this one. You know, I just listen to people go through this kind of agony all the time. And the holidays come, and people, mm-hmm. you know, they go into debt, they go into agony, they go into all this stuff because, you know, and then a la your mother, you know, a lot of people are just giving people stuff because you got to give people stuff and nobody really wants it. And what do you do with it? And you just feel bad because you don't care, you know, all of those kinds of things. And so to me, of course, it's just one of those places of, well, why do we do that? And which puts us then in a place of, well, how do I want to be with people? How do I want to express how I feel about people? In a la the year-long retreat, you know, what do I want to give?
Right. And like my practice commitment for the week is to look at, to make a recording at the end of the day of how I've given from my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, I see it all day long and still I can't, it doesn't, I can't like shift that to her for some reason.
Yet,
okay.
How much time do you have?
I have a month.
Oh, plenty of time, Kim.
Okay.
No problem. Yeah, and I am going to encourage you to write that letter and just get clear kind of underneath the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we take that top layer off, what are we talking about here? Mm-hmm. You know, your mother's going to be 80 years old.
Yeah.
What are we talking about here? And so to give you a chance to explore that and really get in touch with it might help with the clarity.
Okay. That is thank you so much. And
not just one, Kim. Make it like the recording. Right?
Okay.
Just, you know, work on it. Work on it. But as if this is a, you know, like you know, when our practice of writing a love letter, or it's not, you don't just write a love letter and then okay, done.
Revise, review, look at it, add to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, deeper.
Thank you so much. Right. I just so,
you are
thank
so welcome.
You. I appreciate it so much. Yeah. It's really
take
helpful.
Care.
Thank you, and thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Kim. And Sherry, we've got about 5 minutes, so I think we can have another short conversation here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not good at that, Michael, but I'll do my best.
Okay, we'll do our best here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael, this is Justin in Bear Valley.
Hey, Justin.
Well, hello, Justin. What's going
on? Hello. I'll get right to it. I'll be keeping an eye. But anyways, yeah, I've been looking at this process of fear, which is kind of a new place, I guess, for me, interestingly enough. But just content-wise, well, I'm a teacher, and we're going back to school in, like, 2-3 weeks, and there's a lot of I don't know with, like, grades changing, and we're not even sure really how the school's going to run. And there really is I don't know. Like, no one really knows. But that's being taken into the realm of fear, which is an interesting place.
Well,
to
look. Yes.
Right.
Yes. All right. I mean, yes. when we are confronted with, yes, we never know. We never know. But then when you think about your life being in the hands of people who don't have any idea what's going on, then that is beyond anxiety producing.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And when you were saying that, what that made me think of was, well, we've talked about this on the year-long retreat about, you know, working during kind of these times. And I remember you saying, you know, the greatest gift you can give is to be present, right? And mm-hmm. I've been coming back to that a lot because, I mean, ego just wants me to do something. That's literally what it tells me, which is code for run around with like a, you know, run around like a chicken with your head cut off, not really doing anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just at this moment, there really is nothing to do at this moment. But I don't know, just mm-hmm. paying attention, I guess. And, yeah.
Uh-huh. And so how does it feel, Justin, like this is just ego trying to stir something up? Or is there a real sense of, I think you probably do a lot of things in your life that could be, might be perceived as dangerous, right? there could be injury or even death with what you're doing, right? But there's a conscious awareness that you're bringing to it.
Uh-huh.
You don't tend to go into those things from a place of unconsciousness.
Right. I see what you're saying.
Because you know it's dangerous, right? And you know you need to be paying attention. And you know, I'm sure, being around other people who might not be as committed to paying attention, that people do get into big trouble when they go unconscious and then make those bad ego decisions that we've been talking about, right? And so with this, if you perceive this as the same kind of, you're in nature somewhere, you're doing some sort of activity, and there is danger in that activity, and so you want to be really present.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Is that what you're bringing to this returning to school?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have probably phrased it like that until I kind of heard you describing it, but that, yeah, I mean, that does fit. I just feel I do feel very attentive, and it's almost like not even an identification with the ego. It's just,
right.
Something I'm seeing come up, and for good reason. And like I came back, like I just said, you know, it just feels like at this moment there really is nothing to do, but I am paying attention. I don't know if that answers your question.
That's it.
Okay.
Well, it does perfectly. That's it. Because ego would make it about doing or not doing.
Right. Right.
And what you want to bring to it is present.
Yeah.
So that when there is some action to be taken,
right,
you will be there to act, and you won't fall for the dangers of other people's unconsciousness.
Yeah.
If you're paying attention.
Right. You're hitting on something big, and we are just about there. But I just want to say, I did do a two-hand recording, and what came up is, you know, the content might be really hard, and it might be really challenging, but I'm not going to leave, like, this person.
That's
you know,
right.
He's not going to get this kind of thrown to the sharks. Like, there's a way in which I feel confident that I can be with myself through this. And it is probably going to be hard. I mean, I'm just going to call it for what it is. But, you know, we can be there for us, and however that looks, and we'll see.
Yes. And that awareness that we talk about, too, that it is the greatest kindness that you can offer everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody is... in the situation is going to be in some level of freak out, we can just kind of count on that because that's what conditioned humans tend to be in the best of times. And these are definitely not the best of times. And so to have somebody whose top priority is staying present and paying attention, a tremendous gift to everybody.
Yeah. No, that's great. Cool. Well, I'm glad I got to talk about it with you guys.
It's great to hear from you.
Yeah, good
Keep
to hear
taking
you.
Good care of you.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks,
thank
Dustin.
You. Thank you,
good
Mike.
Good night.
Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Justin. And I heard compassion again, Sherry, in that conversation. A lot of compassion.
It's everywhere, isn't it, Michael?
It's, well, I sure hope so. Yes, I can see that it's critical. I did not miss that tonight.
It's what if we're going to cling to something, let's cling to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant idea.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sherry.
I really
thank you, everyone.
It. All right.
Me too.
Thanks, everyone.
Go happy.
Go happy.
Okay. Good night.